Warning. This episode contains description that some listeners may find distressing, so listener discretion is strongly advised.
Between the summer of 1963 and the autumn of 1965, something terrible happened here that shocked a nation. It would come to forever define this stretch of moorland on the outskirts of Manchester as a place touched by evil.
Few murders, before or since, have caused such revulsion. The discovery of children's bodies on Saddleworth Moor left the public wondering who could commit such dreadful crimes and why.
I wanted one of them to come up with the truth so I could nail the two of them. Nail them for the rest of life like they'd nail me down. I wanted them prosecuted for Keith's death.
Hi, M&Ms. Welcome back to another episode of Murder and More. As always, I am your host, Kira. A serial killer is described as an individual who murders three or more people over more than a month and with a significant break between them. Serial killers usually stick to the same modus operandi and typically have a similar victimology. Serial killers also have several different motives for committing the murders, from attention seeking to anger and potentially even financial gain. There are usually certain characteristics found in serial killers, which increases the probability of them becoming one. These characteristics can include mental illness, being abused, whether that be physically, mentally, or sexually by a family member in their childhood. They're frequently bullied or isolated whilst they were growing up, and they typically have a lower IQ and struggle to hold down a job. Since Jack the Ripper tormented the streets of London in 1888, it's approximated that there have been 34 serial killers to date. However, it's proposed that that number is actually larger. Ian Brady was born in Glasgow, Scotland, in 1938. His mother was unmarried and the identity of his father has never been confirmed. However, his mother claims Brady's father died a few months before he was born. Brady's mother was a tea room waitress and had no support, financially or physically, so a few months after he was born, she gave him to a couple that lived nearby. This couple already had four children of their own, and she knew that under their care he'd be properly looked after. They'd be able to provide him with an upbringing that she knew she couldn't. Brady was a disobedient child and his behaviour declined as the years went on. There are suggestions that Brady tortured animals when he was a child, but he strongly denies this, and in his early teens he appeared before a juvenile court twice for breaking into a house. Brady left school at 15 and took on several jobs, a shipyard in Glasgow and then a messenger boy for a local butcher's. If we're going to argue that Brady didn't torture animals as a child, then his violent behaviour definitely started to show in his mid-teens. He had a girlfriend, Evelyn Grant, however their relationship ended when he threatened her with a flick knife. Once again, Brady appeared before the court with 9 charges against him. He was put on probation on the condition that he lived with his mother, who had moved to Manchester and married an Irishman named Patrick Brady. Brady took his stepfather's name and got a job on a market. Not long after Brady moved to Manchester to be with his mum, he was caught stealing from the market he worked on and was sent to Strange Ways, a prison in Manchester, which is now HMP Manchester, for 3 months. As he was under 18, he was sentenced to 2 years in a Borstal to be rehabilitated, which is now known as a Young Offenders Institution. After being moved from London to Yorkshire and then to Hull, Brady was released in November 1957 when he returned to Manchester. After taking on a few jobs he really didn't enjoy, Brady went to the local library and acquired some instruction manuals on bookkeeping and spent hours studying. In 1959, he got a clerical job at a chemical distribution company in Manchester, but his colleagues described him as quiet but short-tempered. Myra Hindley was born in Manchester in 1942. Unlike Brady, Hindley wasn't a disobedient child. However, she did have a poor upbringing. Her parents were tough on her, her father was an alcoholic, and they regularly used to beat Hindley. When she was four, her sister Maureen was born, which made the conditions in the house even worse. And a year later, Hindley was sent to live with her grandmother nearby. Hindley's father had served in World War II in the parachute regiment and was known as a hard man, and he expected his daughters to be equally as tough. When Hindley was eight, a boy scratched her cheek. Hindley ran to her father in tears, who threatened to leather her if she didn't stick up for herself, so she ran back and punched the boy several times. A forensic psychiatrist has since said that Hindley's relationship with her father had brutalised her, and that, quote, when this happens at a young age, it can distort a person's reaction to such situations for life, end quote. Like Brady, Hindley had several jobs during her teens. She began her working life as a junior clerk, and then took a job at an engineering company where she was soon let go due to her regularly failing to turn up for her shifts. In January 1961, Hindley got a job as a typist at Millwoods, the same company Brady worked for. Hindley quickly became infatuated with Brady, despite knowing he had a criminal record. In December of 1961, Brady asked Hindley on a date, where they went to the cinema, and this quickly became a regular occurrence for the couple. They would go to the cinema and then go back to Hindley's house to have a drink. As their relationship continued, Hindley began to change, bleaching her hair and wearing clothes that for the 60s were considered risque. Knee-high boots, short skirts and leather jackets. Hindley's appearance wouldn't be the only thing that changed during their relationship, however. Her behaviour had started to change too. The pair both became less sociable and started reading books from the library about crime and torture. They also bought a camera and started taking pictures of each other that again, at the time would have been considered explicit, which again wasn't in Hindley's nature as she was usually fairly shy. In June 1963, the pair moved in with Hindley's grandmother in Manchester, and according to Hindley, Brady started talking about committing the perfect murder just a few weeks later. On the 12th of July, Brady came up with a plan to put his wishes into action. He told Hindley to drive around the area in a van that she'd borrowed from a greengrocer, and he would follow on his motorbike. Brady told Hindley that he would flash his lights if he saw someone he was interested in. At some point that evening, Brady saw a young girl walking along the street and flashed Hindley. However, she recognised this girl and knew she was only 8 years old. She also knew the girl to be her mother's neighbour. By all accounts, that girl had a massively lucky escape. At around 7:30 p.m, Brady saw another girl walking down the street and once again flashed Hindley. Although Hindley knew the girl to be Pauline Reed, one of her sister's school friends, Hindley also knew that she was 16 and figured there would be less attention given to a 16-year-old going missing than there would be to an 8-year-old going missing. Hindley offered Pauline a ride to the disco the girl was walking to unattended, but once she was in the van, Hindley asked Pauline to go to Saddleworth Moor with her to help her search for an expensive glove she claimed she'd lost up there, in exchange for some records as a reward for helping. Naively, Pauline obliged as she knew Hindley and clearly didn't believe she was in any danger. When they arrived at the moor, Brady pulled up behind them and Hindley told Pauline he was helping them search. There are only three people who know what happened on the moor that day, and naturally accounts are conflicted. Hindley claims Brady took Pauline onto the moor alone and returned half an hour later before taking Hindley to show where he'd left Pauline. According to Hindley's account, Pauline had been beaten and nearly decapitated by two large cuts to her throat, and when she asked Brady if he had sexually assaulted her, his reply was, quote, of course I did, end quote. However, Brady claimed that Hindley was not only present when he attacked Pauline, but she also partook in the sexual assault. Not only was Pauline a friend of Maureen's, but she'd also dated a local 15-year-old boy called David Smith, who was well known to the police and already had several criminal convictions, including actual bodily harm and breaking and entering. David was questioned about Pauline's disappearance, but police concluded he had no involvement. Several months later, Brady made the decision that he wanted to kill again. On the afternoon of the 23rd of November 1963, John Kilbride went to the cinema. Instead of returning home afterwards, as his mother had instructed him, he went to help out on the local market to gain some pocket money. That evening, the pair offered the 12-year-old a lift home from the market, stating that his parents might worry that he was out so late. Despite his mother's warnings about always being on guard, considering the disappearance of Pauline Reed, John willingly got into the car with the couple. As with Pauline's case, the pair got John onto the moor by telling him they required his help searching for a glove that Hindley had lost there. Once in the safety of the vast moorlands that can be located in the northwest of England in the Peak District National Park, Brady took the boy while Hindley waited in the car she'd hired earlier that day. Brady sexually assaulted John and attempted to slit his throat with a 6-inch knife before completing the gruesome murder by strangling him with a shoelace. After John went missing, a massive search was undertaken. Over 700 statements were taken from potential witnesses, 500 missing posters were printed and distributed across Manchester, and 2,000 people participated in searches of waste ground and derelict buildings. On two occasions, a week after the murder and about a month after the murder, Hindley hired a car to go up to Saddleworth Moor, just to ensure the burial site hadn't been disturbed. For months, the pair ceased killing, and it wouldn't be until June 1964, 7 months after they took John Kilbride's life, that they took another. On the evening of the 16th of June, 12-year-old Keith Bennett was on his way to his grandmother's house when Hindley stopped him and asked for his help with putting some boxes in her car. She promised the boy that once he'd helped her, she'd drive him home. With Brady in the back of the van, however, the couple didn't return the boy to the safety of his home and instead drove up to Saddleworth Moor, and Brady took the boy off, again under the pretense that they were looking for a lost glove. Approximately half an hour later, Brady returned alone carrying a spade that he'd hidden on the moor earlier that day. When asked what had happened, Brady told Hindley that he sexually assaulted Keith and then strangled him with a piece of string. Keith's stepfather, Jimmy Johnson, initially became and remained a suspect for 2 years after the young boy went missing and was questioned 4 times regarding Keith's disappearance. He was eventually cleared of any involvement and the case went cold. On the 15th of August that year, Maureen Hindley married David Smith, the teenager who had been in a brief relationship with Pauline Reed before she vanished. The marriage was organised fairly quickly due to Maureen being 7 months pregnant with their first child. The ceremony was performed at a registry office, with none of Maureen's family present as they didn't approve of the relationship. The couple moved in with David's father, and the following day, Brady insisted the newlyweds join him and Hindley on a day trip to Windermere, a large natural lake in the Lake District, about 19 miles northwest of Manchester. This was Brady's first time meeting David, and the pair bonded over subjects such as society, wealth, and the possibility of robbing the bank. This day trip would become one of many, which, while the relationship between Brady and David made Hindley jealous, it also made her closer with her sister. Sometime in late 1964, there were post-war slum clearances in Manchester, which saw nearly 1.5 million properties demolished. This meant that Brady, Hindley and her grandmother were moved from their home in Manchester to an estate about 10 miles east in a town called Hyde. The couple made friends with an 11-year-old girl, Patricia Hodges, who lived a few doors down. Patricia would accompany them to Saddleworth Moor to collect peat to improve the quality of their soil in their new home. Thankfully, the young girl remained unharmed, as the pair believed it would be too risky to kill her. In their justification of sparing Patricia from a gruesome death on Saddleworth Moor, they contended that the case would most probably be solved fairly quickly due to the girl living just down the road from them. On the morning of Boxing Day, 1964, Hindley dropped her grandmother at a relative's house and refused to let her back home. Later that day, the pair visited a fairground and saw a young girl, 10-year-old Leslie Ann Downey, who appeared to be there on her own. This time, the couple changed their MO, simply so Brady could record the torture that they would inflict on the 10-year-old, and so that he could take pictures of her. they walked towards the girl carrying a bag of shopping and deliberately dropped it. The couple asked for her help carrying it and then transporting it home. Again, naively, the girl agreed to help. Once back at the house, Leslie was stripped naked, gagged, bound, and forced to pose for explicit photos. She was then raped and likely strangled with a piece of string. According to Hindley, she went to run the girl a bath before coming back to find her dead. However, Brady insisted that Hindley was the one that killed her. Once deceased, they wrapped the girl's body in a plastic sheet, and the following day, the pair drove Leslie's body up to Saddleworth Moor and buried her in a shallow grave with her clothes next to her. They then calmly picked up Hindley's grandmother and brought her home. By February 1965, Patricia Hodges had stopped visiting Brady and Hindley. However, Maureen's husband, David Smith, was still a regular visitor to the couple. Brady would give David books to read and they would regularly discuss robbery and murder. On Hindley's 23rd birthday, Maureen and David were relocated to a block of flats not far from where Brady and Hindley lived, which allowed the two couples to see more of each other. However, it was usually on Brady's terms. Several months after Hindley's birthday, on the evening of the 6th of October 1965, she drove Brady to the train station in Manchester and waited in the car while he went to find their next victim. A few minutes later, Brady reappeared with 17-year-old Edward Evans. They took the innocent young lad back to the house they shared with Hindley's grandmother and relaxed with a bottle of wine. At some point that evening, Brady instructed Hindley to go and collect David Smith, which would eventually be his downfall. Hindley collected David and informed him that Brady wanted to speak to him. David was brought into the house and told to wait in the kitchen. David recalled this evening to the police later, stating, quote, "I waited about a minute or two, then suddenly I heard a hell of a scream. It sounded like a woman, really high-pitched. Then the screams carried on, one after another, really loud. Then I heard Myra shout, 'Dave, help him,' very loud. When I ran in, I just stood inside the living room and I saw a young lad. He was lying with his head and shoulders on the couch and his legs were on the floor. He was facing upwards. Ian was standing over him, facing him, with his legs on either side of the young lad's legs. The lad was still screaming. Ian had a hatchet in his hand. He was holding it above his head and he hit the lad on the left side of his head with the hatchet. I heard the blow. It was a terrible, hard blow. It sounded horrible." End quote. David then watched on as Brady strangled Edward with an electrical cord. Brady quickly realised Edward's body was too heavy for David to carry out to the car on his own, so they wrapped it in a plastic sheet and put it in their spare room. It's of the belief that Brady wanted David at the house to try and get him involved in the murder. However, this failed, and in the end, it would prove to be his biggest mistake. David unwillingly agreed to return to Hindley's house the following morning with a pram to help transport Edward's body out of the house and into the car to enable the couple to take it to Saddleworth Moor to be buried. However, unbeknownst to the couple that night, this would never happen. When David got home to Maureen, it was the middle of the night. Feeling the anxiety radiating from her husband, she made him a cup of tea and asked him what had happened. He promptly threw up and told her everything. Early the next morning, at about 6 a.m, David informed the police about what he had witnessed the previous evening. He went to a phone booth near his house, armed with a hammer for protection just in case he came into contact with Brady. He phoned the police and reported the murder and was subsequently picked up by a police officer and taken to the station. There he told them everything that he'd observed the night before. A detective immediately went to Hindley and Brady's home, disguised as a delivery man. He asked Hindley where her husband was, and she denied any male being in the house until he revealed his real identity. She let the detective in, who told them he was investigating an act of violence that involved guns that had taken place the previous evening. He searched the house and discovered the body in the spare room, where they'd left it just hours earlier. The detective promptly arrested Brady on the suspicion of murder, who told the officer that him and Edward had had a row and the situation had got out of hand. Although at the time they didn't arrest Hindley, she insisted on going with Brady to the station. The only statement she made regarding Edward's death was that it was an accident and was permitted to go home under the expectation that she returned the following day. Brady insisted that Edward's death was the result of an argument and that he and David killed him, with Hindley's only involvement being to do what she was told. When police searched the house that Brady and Hindley lived in with her grandmother, they found an old exercise book with the name John Kilbride on, which instantly made them speculate as to whether the couple were involved in more crimes than just Edward's murder, and that John had potentially met a gruesome fate at the hands of the couple. David then told police that Brady and Hindley had put anything that could incriminate them in any of the crimes into a suitcase. He had no idea where the suitcase may be, however did briefly mention Manchester train station, almost as more of a throwaway comment than an actual suggestion. Nevertheless, police spoke to the British Transport Police, who checked all of the left luggage offices. They eventually found it and several others at the train station. Inside were notes, pornographic magazines, the photographs taken of Leslie Ann Downey, and a number of pictures taken up on the moor. Along with the horrific pornographic pictures they found of Leslie, they also found a 16-minute audio tape of the girl screaming and pleading for help and for her mum, which Leslie's mother identified as the voice of her daughter. Officers made inquiries and spoke to neighbours of the pair and came across Patricia Hodges, who had spent time with them up on Saddleworth Moor. The girl was able to point out some of the pair's favourite spots there, and police immediately started searching the area. On the 16th of October, they found their first body, which was identified by Leslie Ann Downey's mother as her daughter. Then, on the 21st of October, they found the badly decomposed body of John Kilbride, the couple's second victim. Sadly, John's body was so decomposed that it was unrecognisable, and the only way his mother could identify the body was from the clothes he was buried in. The search continued until mid-November, when it was forced to cease due to poor weather conditions. On the 6th of December, Brady was charged with the murders of John Kilbride, Leslie Ann Downey and Edward Evans, and Hindley was charged with the murders of Leslie Ann Downey and Edward Evans. She also had an extra charge of harbouring Brady in the knowledge that he'd killed John Kilbride. The 14-day trial commenced on the 19th of April 1966, where the pair both pleaded not guilty to the charges. Brady admitted that he'd hit Edward, but insisted that someone else had killed the teen, although he had no physical evidence to corroborate this statement. On one of the days, the 16-minute audio tape of Leslie Ann Downey was played to the court, which featured both the voices of Brady and Hindley. Hindley admitted that her attitude towards Leslie was cruel, but this was only due to her concern that someone may hear Leslie's screams. Hindley was prepared with weak alibis for certain times during Leslie's torture and murder. She contended that when Leslie was being undressed, she was downstairs. When the pornographic photos were taken, she claimed to be looking out the window. And when Leslie was being strangled, she was apparently running a bath. These alibis failed to sway the jury, however, because on the 6th of May, after deliberating for only 2 hours, the jury found Brady guilty of the murders of John Kilbride, Leslie Ann Downey and Edward Evans. They additionally found Hindley guilty of the murders of Leslie Ann Downey and Edward Evans. At some point in 1965, the death penalty had been suspended in the UK, meaning Brady and Hindley escaped this fate. Instead, Brady received 3 life sentences and was sent to HMP Durham, and 23-year-old Hindley was given 2 life sentences with an extra 7 years for being an accessory after the fact in the murder of John Kilbride, and was sent to HMP Holloway, which closed in 2016. In early 1985, Brady confessed to a journalist that he'd murdered Pauline Reed and Keith Bennett, which prompted Greater Manchester Police to reopen the investigation. On the 3rd of July, Detective Chief Superintendent Peter Topping, who was head of the Greater Manchester Police's Criminal Investigation Department, visited Brady in prison, who denied any such confession. A search of Saddleworth Moor continued nonetheless, and in November of 1986, Keith Bennett's mother wrote to Hindley, pleading for her help in finding her son's body. Police visited Hindley after she received this letter, and although she denied any involvement in his murder, she agreed to help police identify his burial site by looking at photographs and maps of the moor. On the 16th of December, the police allowed Hindley to visit the moor to aid in their search. She spent hours with the police driving and walking the moor, however failed to identify the burial site. Hindley visited the moor again in March 1987, spending 2 days there attempting to help with the search. Although she confirmed that the two specific sites they were searching were correct, she couldn't recall any further details. After more than 100 days searching, on the 1st of July 1987, they found the body of Pauline Reed, incredibly just 100 yards from where they found Leslie Ann Downey's body. Brady was informed of this find and finally confessed to the murders and agreed to help police in the search for the final body, Keith Bennett. He visited the moor on the 3rd of July, just 2 days after they found Pauline's body. However, he seemed to lose his bearings and blamed this on the fact that the moor had changed a lot since his last visit. Peter Topping refused to allow Brady a second visit to the moor and officially called off the search on the 24th of August. Although Brady was eventually allowed to visit again on the 8th of December and claimed to have identified the burial site, Keith Bennett's body has never been found. In 2003, the Greater Manchester Police briefly resumed the search for Keith's body, having better equipment to utilise in the search of the moor than they did in the 80s. However, their efforts still came up empty, and in 2009, the police admitted that they'd exhausted all avenues, and that Keith's body would only be found if there was a major scientific breakthrough or if new evidence came about, which would prompt the start of a search. Sadly, Keith's mother died in 2012, never having the opportunity to lay her son to rest. Brady caused a lot of disruption whilst in prison. He spent 19 years in mainstream prison before being diagnosed as a psychopath in November 1985, when he was moved to Park Lane Hospital, which is now a psychiatric hospital. Brady complained about the conditions at Park Lane, and in 1999 his wrist was broken, which Brady claimed to be caused by an unprovoked attack from staff. Subsequently, he went on a hunger strike, which to me is what I know Brady for. English laws allowed patients to refuse treatment, however these leniences weren't granted to people being treated for mental illness. After 30 days of refusing to eat, Brady was fitted with a nasogastric tube so that staff could essentially force-feed him. In 2007, Brady became the longest-serving prisoner in England and Wales, after the death of serial killer John Straffan. In 2012, he applied to be sent back to prison due to his wish of starving himself to death. A mental health tribunal was held the following year, where Brady claimed he didn't suffer from paranoid schizophrenia, which they had been treating him for, but a personality disorder. This application was rejected, with the judge stating that he continued to suffer from a mental illness for which he needed to continue to receive treatment. In early 2017, Brady's condition began to deteriorate, and on the 10th of May, he removed his own nasogastric tube, which wasn't replaced. On the 14th of May, doctors assessed Brady and decided that he was nearing the end of his life. The following day, on the 15th of May 2017, Brady died. A post-mortem was performed, which revealed he had died from cor pulmonale, a form of heart failure, secondary to bronchopneumonia and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, a condition that causes inflammation in the lining of the lungs. The doctor that performed the post-mortem also noted that despite Brady being on a hunger strike, his body didn't look emaciated and the strike did not participate in his death. Following in her husband's footsteps, Hindley also wasn't a model inmate. Brady and Hindley sent letters to each other until 1971, when Hindley fell in love with one of the prison officers, Patricia Cairns. It wasn't unusual at the time for officers to either date each other or date inmates. At some point during Hindley's incarceration, Cairns helped Hindley plan an escape. However, a police officer intercepted some keys they'd had copied and sent into the prison. This saw Cairns sentenced to 6 years in prison for her part in the escape attempt. There was also a lot of conflict around her tariff. At the original trial, Hindley was told that she must spend a minimum of 25 years in prison before being considered for parole, which was agreed by the Lord Chief Justice in 1982. However, 3 years later, Home Secretary Leon Britton decided it should be increased to 30 years, a tariff which Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher disagreed with, stating that both Hindley and Brady should never be released from prison. In 1990, the then Home Secretary David Waddington imposed a whole life sentence on Hindley after she confessed to being more involved in the murders than she'd once admitted. In 1996, the parole board suggested Hindley be moved to an open prison, but for an unknown reason, Hindley rejected this idea. Instead, in 1998, she was moved to a medium security prison, High Point Prison, which is now HMP High Point North, a male prison. Over 3 years, Hindley made three separate appeals against her life tariff, on the basis that she had changed and was no longer a danger to society. However, all three appeals were denied. On the 15th of November 2002, Hindley died of respiratory arrest after having a myocardial infarction, or heart attack, just days earlier. Saddleworth Moor is a historic moorland, enclosed by deep V-shaped valleys and fast-flowing streams. Here, you will find rolling hills, 9,000-year-old peat, and wildflowers, such as heather and bilberry. But Saddleworth Moor possesses a dark history that isn't nearly as picturesque as the moorland portrays. Saddleworth Moor may forever be 12-year-old Keith Bennett's resting place. Its deep valleys hold secrets, secrets that may never be uncovered. Secrets that both Hindley and Brady took with them to their graves. Secrets that, for Keith's remaining family, will haunt them until they can be reunited with the boy whose life was taken before it even had a chance to begin. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and review, and Patreon to consider becoming a patron of Murder & More. To interact with us, you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder & More, Instagram at Murder & More Pod, and Facebook at Murder & More Podcast. To view the sources and pictures for this episode, head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com. Have a great week, and I'll see you all next week for another episode.